Telc English B2 C1 Business. Mock Examination 1. Listening Part 1. You will hear two conversations. For each conversation, there are three tasks. Decide if the two statements are true or false, and decide which answer fits best, A, B, or C. You will hear each conversation once. Mark your answers for items 1 to 6 on the answer sheet. First, you will have 30 seconds to read the items. Number 1, 2, and 3.
Ah, hello, you must be Robert Cavill. Glad to finally meet you. Come on in.
Yes, good afternoon, Mrs. Matthews. Nice to meet you too.
As you know, we do appraisals for all new staff after their first 6 months.
Yes, I'm aware I'm due for the appraisal. I expected I was to have it with my line manager.
Well, together with the manager, we review the employee's job description to see how their role may be developing. After that, we review their performance to see how they're getting on.
I see.
Then, once a year, new targets are defined for the following 12 months, and at the end of this time, you'll meet with your boss to see how you've met those targets. But today, as you've only recently joined us, we'll really just be looking at how you think you've got on so far, and what the company thinks of your work since you joined us. And of course, we can discuss anything that comes up as we go along.
I see. And if you find that I'm performing well, does that mean that I'll qualify for an increase in salary?
Well, it's not quite as simple as that, and it's certainly not automatic. But as time goes by, if an employee is performing well and the company is demanding more of them than was originally stated in their job description, then yes, we in HR might well want to look at their package.
When you say package, do you mean how much they are paid?
It's more than just the remuneration. The company can offer other perks and privileges too. Some of our top people are offered shares in the company, but that does not happen until after the probation period.
Yes, of course.
Well, let's get started.
Number 4, 5, and 6.
Hi, Brian. You gonna be long? Looks like you've got a lot of copying to do.
Well, yes. I've got all these training handouts to do. Do you just have that one sheet?
Yes, I want to get it in the mail and I need to keep a copy.
Here, Josie, let me have it. I can slip it in before the next batch.
Thanks, Brian. That's great. Miss Simmons wants it ready before lunch, and what Miss Simmons wants, Miss Simmons gets. Oh, I just remembered. She asked me to talk to you about the Christmas do. Are you still on to help out? She says you were such a good DJ last year, and we saved a lot by you doing the music.
Yeah, sure, whatever. Free food and drink for me, right?
Yeah, I think the boss can live with that.
Do you want this on two sheets or double-sided?
Double-sided, please.
Where are we having the party this year?
I thought we could use the sports hall again. It worked well last year, and it's got a bar area, big dance floor, and plenty of space to chill.
Just the one copy, right?
Make it two, one for the day file.
Yeah, the sports hall's cool. There are good places for the speakers, and we can get all the wires and cables well out of the way.
There you go. So I tell Miss Simmons yes, right?
Yeah, count me in. It's all good.
I've got to go now. See you. Thanks for letting me cut in ahead of you.
No problem. Oh, Josie, for tomorrow night, we thought we could go to the new Italian place.
Sounds good. Who else is coming?
Oh, just the usual bunch.
Great. Gotta get back to work now.
Okay, see you.
End of listening, part one. Listening, part two. You will hear the recording of a presentation given at a conference. First, you'll have 2 minutes to read the items. Then you'll hear the presentation. You will hear the recording once. While you're listening, decide which answer fits best, A, B, or C. For item 14, you're asked to choose the option that best summarizes the speaker's attitude. Mark your answers for items 7 to 14 on the answer sheet. Now read the items.
Good evening and welcome to the latest in our Building a Better Business series. This evening's guest is a real treat. Henry Simon started Sweet Spoon Ice Cream 6 years ago, and he's since grown the business from a one-room scoop shop to a national brand carried in 17 states. Tonight, he'll share his story and answer questions. Please welcome Henry Simon.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here, and I hope I'll help you all think differently about entrepreneurship this evening. To give you something else to look forward to, apart from PowerPoint slides, I do have some ice cream to share at the end. So, I started my first Sweet Spoon ice cream shop 6 years ago in a store with room for ice cream making equipment and only a few tables. Here's a picture of the storefront on the opening day. It wasn't a great location. It was far from downtown, and because of delays, I opened at the end of summer. That wasn't exactly prime ice cream selling time. I used all my personal savings to purchase equipment, and I borrowed additional money from an uncle who generously offered to be my earliest investor. I had no real experience in the ice cream business, but I was young and determined to build a brand that could be scaled up. In other words, I wanted to grow my business from one shop to a chain of shops all over the country. That's not exactly how things happened, as you'll hear, but that was my original goal. So why ice cream? It's one of those products that the public just loves. People get excited about it. Everyone has favorite flavors and they're loyal to particular brands, and I saw opportunity in that. Also, there are so many chances to be creative, coming up with flavors, packaging, promotions. With ice cream, all of these aspects of business can be fun. Before Sweet Spoon, I worked in a cubicle at a major corporation. I learnt a lot, but the environment wasn't for me. When I left, I wanted my next venture to better fit my personality. That's something important to consider as you're planning your own business. So that was the ice cream. But up until then, I hadn't even thought of the organic factor. It was when I did some market research that I realized that no one was doing organic ice cream on a major scale. And I certainly didn't see affordable organic ice cream among the few options out there. With so much interest in healthy eating, it seemed that organic ice cream could quickly gain a following. And by making it affordable, I could introduce a wider variety of people to the benefits of organic food. So, I had found my unique selling point. Once I'd decided on organic ice cream, I researched ingredients and recipes. Because I wanted to inspire positive economic and environmental change, I sought out local ingredients wherever possible. Luckily, here in upstate New York, finding organic milk and cream was easy. My next slide shows where my suppliers are located. I get my dairy products from family farms within 20 miles of that first shop, and the eggs from a farm just 30 miles away. The rest of my ingredients, chocolate, vanilla, cookies and the like, travel a little farther to get here, but they're also organic and all natural. We don't use artificial colors or flavors, or the unnecessary stabilizers and other ingredients common in other brands. That means our products have a positive impact on the environment. No chemicals used in production, and we're supporting as many local businesses as possible. After addressing the basics, I opened that first store and jumped in. Like I said, I lacked previous ice cream experience and had only limited restaurant background. That first year was a challenge, to say the least. As you can see from this diagram, I worked 15 hours or more a day, especially in the summer. Because I was the only employee, I spent mornings ordering ingredients, answering emails, making bank deposits, and completing paperwork. Once the store opened, I was there mixing ice cream, serving scoops, and talking to customers. After I closed the store in the evenings, I washed the dishes, recorded the day's sales, and took care of other details that needed attention. It was tough that first year, time-wise and budget-wise. I didn't make much money. I quickly realized that opening a whole chain of stores might not give me enough income to even get by. The expenses and time involved were just too great and the income too unpredictable, especially on rainy and snowy days. So I got creative. I talked to a few local restaurant owners who agreed to buy bulk containers of ice cream for their dessert menus. And I hired my brother to start selling scoops at the city's summer farmers market. This diversification brought in new revenue streams, and it introduced our brand to new customers. My next slide shows how things just grew from there. I was still busy at the scoop shop, but in the second year, I had enough income to hire new employees. After the restaurant and market business grew, I talked to a local grocery store owner about packing some containers by hand to sell on her shelves. She liked the idea, so I did that for a few months. Soon, customers started asking other stores to carry Sweet Spoon, and I expanded the store business. By the fourth year, my sales were five times what they'd been in the first year, and I started to attract interest from investors. I was at a point where I either needed to expand production or cap distribution because I was struggling to meet demand. So, because there was interest, I took on those new investors and opened up the factory that we now operate out on Lockwood Road. That allowed us to boost output, offer new sizes, and try a wide variety of new flavors. We've since partnered with two regional markets and one national grocery chain to get our products offered in a variety of eastern and southern states. When you're building your own brand, money, time, and resources are obviously important. But here's something else that's important to consider: customer engagement. Sweet Spoon didn't have much of an advertising budget in the early years, so we really relied on special events to spread the word, and we still do. We hand out free scoops at school fundraisers and community festivals. We sponsor contests on different social media sites and give two-for-one coupons to the winners. Our annual Name the New Flavor competition has become hugely popular. Last year, we also purchased an ice cream truck that we take to grocery stores across the region. People get the chance to meet Sweetspoon employees and sample some of our new flavors. Our website hits jump by 9 to 11% in the days after each of those store visits, so we know that these events do generate interest. This year, we've also announced a campaign that helps us continue doing good things in our community. Our new non-profit Pennies for Parks funds the purchase of open spaces that can be converted to parkland. With each packaged ice cream container we sell, we donate a percentage of the profits to Pennies for Parks. Pennies might not sound like much, but they add up to a successful giving model. As you can see on this table, for every 1,000 containers we sell, and we sell many more than that a day in the summer months, we're able to purchase a tenth of an acre of land. During busy weeks, we can fund a full acre of parkland or more just by doing what we do best, selling ice cream. Those new parks are important, and we really can have meaningful impact with the seemingly small donations we make. Now, because I know you're all eager to try some of those new flavors, I'll wrap this up with some advice. Whether you're starting a design business, a tutoring service, a retail shop, or an ice cream brand, remember to look for what you love. You'll need that passion to pull you through the long days when money is tight and business is slow. Sooner or later, those things will happen. As you get busy, partner with people who are good at your weaknesses. If you love the creative side, for example, focus on that and hire an accountant to handle the financials. Ask friends and family members for help too. They may or may not provide financial assistance, but they will give you personal support. Having a shoulder to cry on is tremendously helpful when you need it, and celebrating with those closest to you makes the victories even sweeter. Surround yourself with positive people, do good things in your community, and do what you love. You might not get rich right away, but I'll bet you'll be happy. Now then, while the team hands out some scoops of Sweetspoon ice cream, I'm happy to take questions. Who wants to start?
End of listening, part 2. Listening, part 3. You will hear a talk show with people giving their opinions on a topic. Which statement, A to K, best matches the opinions 15 to 19? Mark your answers for items 15 to 19 on the answer sheet. You will now have 1 minute to read statements A to K. You will then hear the talk show once.
Welcome to today's edition of Have Your Say. I'm Adam McCallan. Our topic today is globalization. Although globalization is now a fact of life, the question remains: what are the main challenges of globalization and how do we deal with them? Our lines are now open for you to have your say.
Number 15.
I think the main challenge is to keep our individuality, as everything is becoming more and more standardized, or, let's be frank, more and more Americanized. I know what I'm talking about because my company has been taken over by an American conglomerate, and now I have a hard time adapting to their time is money culture. I'm not anti-globalization. In fact, I'm all in favor of it, economically and industrially speaking, but we can't ignore the negative effects on our culture and society. People are becoming clones of each other. We're losing our uniqueness, and as a result, the world is becoming a duller place.
Number 16. Okay, we've all heard statements such as 33% of the world's population get only 3% of the whole world's income, and almost half the world's population live on less than $2 a day. That may be true. But I'm convinced that globalization is not only good for the rich, it's also good for the poor. My company, for example, has invested heavily in India and made a contribution to boosting the economy there and creating lots of jobs. In my opinion, the challenge will be to continue that trend and ensure that poverty is reduced through economic growth. Number 17.
I work for Greenpeace, and let me tell you that globalization's bad news for the environment. When manufacturers build factories in new markets, more oil or coal are burned. As international trade increases, more and more fuel is needed to transport people and goods around the world. By 2030, the world's population will require 50% more energy, water, and food. I'm firmly convinced that something must be done soon, before the Earth's no longer able to sustain human demands. Only massive investments in alternate forms of energy can help us break out of the carbon trap.
Number 18.
Globalization is often in the headlines, but there's no question for me as to its main advantage, improving international understanding. I personally really enjoy working in international teams and figuring out different mindsets. It really is enriching. And anyway, since economies have become interdependent, we really need to cooperate and understand each other. And I think this is having an impact on state governments, who more than ever before see that maintaining international peace and security benefits their national economies.
Number 19.
I think the biggest challenge is to keep corporate globalization in check and curb the power of the multinationals. As companies get bigger, ordinary people have less and less control over their lives, and little companies like mine don't have much chance of survival. Money is power, and big companies have strong lobbies that force governments to do what they want, not what's good for people or the environment. We need to put power back into the hands of governments and citizens. We have to make companies accountable for their actions and act in the interests of people and not just think of their profit.
Well, there have certainly been some interesting contributions to our program so far. The lines are open for another hour, so please keep those calls coming. But first, it's time for World News.
End of listening, part 3. Listening, part 4. You will hear a conference call between several speakers. First, you will have 1 minute to read the items. Then you'll hear the conference call. You will hear the recording once. During the recording, decide if the statements are true or false. Mark your answers for items 20 to 25 on the answer sheet. Now read the items.
Hi everyone, Sue here. I've just had lunch at my desk. It was too hot to go outside. London is suffering from a heat wave. Are we all on board?
Hi Sue, Luke here. It was a sunny day in Sydney too. I've just been sitting on my balcony enjoying the evening air. What's it like in Delhi, Raj?
Hi folks. It's been raining all day in Delhi. I couldn't find my umbrella this morning, so I was late for work. But otherwise, it's been an okay day. It's 5:30 in the afternoon and I've just got home.
Okay. What about Amber? Amber, are you there?
Good morning, everyone. New York here. Sorry I'm late. Getting to the office punctually for an 8 a.m. conference call is not easy. I haven't even managed to get a cup of coffee.
Don't worry about being a little late, Amber. Can you manage without coffee for 30 minutes?
Sure, no problem, Sue. Go ahead.
Okay, everyone. Welcome to this week's conference call. Last week, I told you that the company wants to invest more in young staff showing manager potential and that we were to double the number of overseas training assignments. Our target is to have 30 international trainees by the end of the year. And last week in our conference call, we decided that the first step should be to identify branches that would be interested in taking on a trainee. Yesterday, the Board of Managers confirmed that Head Office London would be bearing all the costs. Have you checked with your office yet, Amber?
Well, yes, but I have an issue with asking branches whether they want a young staff member, someone they don't have to pay. In my experience, things that are free are not appreciated. How do we ensure that both the branches and the employee benefit from the experience?
Yes, you have a point there, Amber. In fact, we've had cases in the past where the trainees have complained that they weren't given enough responsibility.
Well, didn't we agree to ask the branches to provide a detailed job description and to nominate a mentor for the 12 months, who is also to write an appraisal at the end? I'd have thought that would be enough to guarantee that the trainees are really involved in the daily business. And I think the fact that the assignments have been extended from 9 to 12 months will also improve their position. It means that the local management is more willing to invest in training them at the beginning. Then they have an extra staff member who can really share the load for a relatively long period of time. They have a better return on investment.
Maybe we should introduce an interim report from both trainee and mentor after 3 months, just to check everything is on track.
Yes.
That's a great idea, Luke. Could you come up with a form with a few relevant questions that could be used as a template?
No problem. I'll do that straight away and send out a draft to look at before our next conference call.
So what response have you had so far from the branches in your area? Here in London, I've managed to identify 5 positions.
Yes, India is very open to the idea. I've already have a very positive reaction from the Mumbai branch. Quite a few departments would be interested in taking a trainee on board. Currently, we already have 5 international trainees in Delhi, so I don't think there's much of a chance upping the number here. We are currently concentrating on getting more of the branches in South India involved, like Bangalore and Chennai, for example.
How about other places in North India? I have a young man in the sales department who would love to go on a trainee assignment to India. However, he's a marathon runner and he told me he'd have difficulty training in some of the places due to the climate. As it's bad for the body, he doesn't want to stop running. He said the climate in North India would be all right.
Fine, I'll look into it.
How was the reaction in Australia, Luke?
Well, Sydney and Melbourne are not too keen on taking on more trainees. But we're looking into the possibility of positions in New Zealand. I reckon you can count on a total of 5 openings for trainees down under, but I need to talk about our trainee in Melbourne.
Can we come back to that later, Luke? First, I'd like to have New York's reaction to the news. Amber?
Well, here in New York, it looks like we can increase the number of international trainees to about 10. But I also have interesting news about the disabled candidate you introduced to us, and this might be of interest to Raj and Luke, too. Our sales manager thinks the candidate's profile would be a perfect match for the sales department, but it's located on the 4th floor of the building. So management had strong doubts until we were able to satisfy the company's evacuation procedures for wheelchair-bound employees, say, in the case of a fire. Safety regulations are rather strict, so the only thing we could do would be to relocate the department to the ground floor. We don't know when this is going to happen, though, but where there's a will, there's a way.
Okay then, Amber. We can discuss the details later on this afternoon. So, Luke, what did you want to tell us?
Well, I just wanted to let you know that Jane, our new trainee in Melbourne, is having serious health problems. She seems to have an allergy to the Australian mosquitoes. Apparently, she's never had problems before, but here, when she's bitten, the bites swell to golf ball-sized lumps and go red and are extremely itchy. She's now on medication, and the doctor reckons she doesn't need to be sent home, but she is going to have to be careful how and where she spends her time outside. But this is the kind of thing you don't know beforehand, so I can't see how we could have avoided it. It's not as if we can include a local mosquito allergy test in every pre-assignment medical checkup.
Luke, is Jane okay to stay and cope with the problems as best as she can?
Yes, she loves it over here. So we would be very disappointed if the assignment had to be cut short.
I have a matter I would like to discuss too.
Yes, Raj, go ahead.
Well, at the moment our trainees live in the Waterview apartments, which have excellent amenities, are generously furnished, and not too expensive. However, the trainees have asked me to contact the owners several times because the air conditioning was malfunctioning and the swimming pool was closed. And now, the property owners have converted the top floor into a disco and bar, which is open 4 days a week.
That doesn't sound good.
Yes. All the trainees have complained about the noise and keep asking us to organize other apartments. Well, we have 12 months contract, so we can't move them, even if they find that difficult to understand. But I'd like to use another apartment building for the new trainee, who's arriving next month. So, my question is the housing allowance fixed, or could it be adapted to cover slightly more expensive accommodation?
I suggest you look around and present a couple of alternatives for approval, but I would try and stick to the current amount as far as possible.
Okay. I'll send you a list with details in the next few days, as we need a quick decision.
Okay, so let's just go through the next month's staff movements.
This is the end of the listening subtest. Thank you for listening.